Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I'm really excited to be here with you today. And I've been away from the show for several weeks, and we've been having guests, and we've been having replays, and it's really exciting to be back here today. And it's especially exciting to... It's just especially exciting to be talking about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. If you've been on my newsletter list, you've been watching some of the communication that's come out over the last couple of weeks that I've been sending on the digestion, because I'm so intrigued and excited by all the amazing new research that talks about it. So what I want to do today is I want to share with you that intimate relationship that your brain has with your gut. So the intimate relationship, people say, well, what do you mean the brain and the gut? Like, there are two different parts. One's in the head, one's in the abdomen. And quite frankly, yeah, they are physically separated, but the chemical and electrical connection between the two is enormous. A lot of times people walk around and say, oh, I have a gut feeling about that, or I just followed my gut to make a decision, or when there's something that's making you a little stressed, you have butterflies in your gut. Part of that two-way communication between your brain and your gut. And it is indeed a two-way communication. It doesn't go in one direction or the other. It goes in both directions and practically simultaneously. So I just want to fill you in about how important it is to keep your gut healthy in order to keep your brain healthy, and how important it is to keep your brain healthy in order to keep your gut healthy. So just a little background, and for those of you who are new to the show, we do this show each week, and I love to bring you cutting-edge information about how you can stay healthy and happy. And if you're not already on our subscriber list or our newsletter list, you can go to drritamarie.com and sign up there and get a free series of information on how to manage your energy and how to increase your energy. And if you do that, we'll automatically notify you whenever there's a new radio show, because we do these each week. So let's get back to the gut and the brain. So I'm excited to talk to you, because one of the things people don't realize is that what you eat affects your brain in more ways than just, you know, making you foggy because you ate too much. So there's an intricate connection. So let's just step back a little bit. You know that your digestion is where your food goes after you eat it. But really, when you start to think about it in terms of your food becomes you, your food is you. What you eat, you wear. So the food on your plate, think about it. If you're eating Pringles processed in a chemical factory, loaded with pesticides, GMOs, all sorts of preservatives and additives and trans fats, all of those nutrients get into your body. Toxins get into your body, I should say, because there's very little nutrition in a Pringle. And they become you. They become part of you. Your liver fights hard to get rid of the toxins that are in there, the pesticides and the herbicides and the glyphosate and all sorts of other things that they put in there, the hydrogenated oils, they become part of your cell membranes instead of the nice clean omega-3 fats and some of the other fats that we need in the cell membranes that actually help with the transport of nutrients in and waste out. You become the food you eat. And so many times we kind of become addicted to our food, right? We started out life with junk, really. How many of you, your parents started giving you the Pablum cereal when you were 6 months old or 4 months old? How many of you got processed food from the time you were born in that you didn't get breastfed like you should have gotten? You got formula. And I'm not making anybody wrong for not doing that. There's oftentimes some reasons for it, but a big reason that a lot of women stopped breastfeeding their children in the 50s and 60s was because the powers that be decided that they could make a profit on selling infant formula, and they sold it as healthier for the baby, more convenient, more consistent, easier for you. And a lot of women bought it because there wasn't a lot of research back then. There wasn't a lot of nutritional information. There weren't blog talk radios on health and nutrition that were on the airwaves every day, multiple times a day. So people got their health information from their doctors. And doctors aren't trained in nutrition. Doctors aren't trained in the proper care and feeding of an infant baby. They've been sold a bill of goods by the companies that make formula, billion-dollar industry. And meanwhile, the baby suffered. And when those babies suffered, what they didn't get from their moms was all the beneficial bacteria, all the antibodies that the mom could give them through the breast milk to support a healthy gut and a healthy body. And so many of us, most of us, especially in that era, started out life with like one foot off the stool, right? We had a, instead of a three-legged stool, we had a two-legged stool. There's a piece missing. And that was really the integrity and the good beneficial bacterial function in our guts. And that's where it started. It started with the formula we were fed. And if you were breastfed, it started maybe with the crackers and the teething biscuits that you were given when you were 6 or 7 months old. It started with the chocolate cake that you got for your first birthday to celebrate, of course, along with maybe some soda or some Kool-Aid, which was our beverage of choice when I grew up. And it started with the antibiotics that you might have been given as an infant because maybe you had colic or an ear infection or you were creating mucus as a result of being fed this formula that came from a cow instead of a mom, and your body was rejecting it, but instead they thought that that was an infection and put you on antibiotics. And antibiotic use has gone down dramatically these days because of the awareness of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. But back then, it was every sniffle got an antibiotic. And what it did was disrupt the normal flora. And let's talk about what that is. Up until just recently, we always talked about the gut organisms, the colonies in our gut, as microflora or gut flora. And now the big term is microbiome. And it's a lovely term, and it's wonderful that mainstream is starting to see it. But back then, when you were a baby, or a one-year-old or a two-year-old, or maybe when you first started school and you were given a rounds and rounds and rounds of antibiotics, those bacteria in your gut got disrupted. And actually, it's been said, and I've seen studies that say that when antibiotics first came about, which was probably, I don't know the exact date, but I think it was the 40s or 50s, that initially the drug companies put in the information about it, and they told the doctors to tell people to give probiotics with it. And I haven't actually read the studies. I've just heard this in hearsay, so I'm not validating that this is actually true, but it sounds good. Sounds good. And it sounds very responsible. But quickly, that stopped being the case because people didn't want to have to give their kid two different things. They want to give them one thing, one prescription. So they stopped doing that. I think at one point they might have had the probiotics in the antibiotic, but then they realized that the antibiotic was killing the probiotic. So they said, you know, you should do it separately. So we started out life on the wrong foot. Our guts did anyway. And, you know, how many babies have colic? You know, I'm not saying breastfed babies don't have colic, and there's not other reasons for colic, but a lot of the reasons for colic is what you're feeding that child, you know, the lack of good nutrition. And even with the moms, you know, if the mom was breastfeeding, mom wasn't given instruction about how to eat properly so that baby didn't get all these antibodies. Because quite frankly, you know, the human body is well-designed, it's well thought out. When baby is born, we have what's called hyperpermeability of the intestinal lining. What does that mean? That means that the holes between the cells in the intestine where the nutrients are absorbed are a little bit wider than they are in an adult. And the reason for this is to allow the passage of antibodies from mom, the protection that mom's developed over her lifetime, to be passed to the child. So it's a beautiful design. It's only meant to be that way for a short period of time. Baby gets colostrum during the first few days. Mom doesn't produce real milk that's actually colostrum, which is just this fluid that's loaded with immunologic goodness for the baby's immune system. So it's intended that way. So think about this. It's intended to be wide open like that. And all that's supposed to be entering are is this beautiful breast milk that's, you know, pre-digested, easy to handle for the baby. And instead, with this open digestive tract, baby is given this formula from whatever company is making it, Nestle or some other big name company, that really doesn't have a whole lot of desire, let's just say, for your health or interest in your health. They have a desire and an interest in profit. So the food is the cow's milk formula that has corn syrup and lactose and cow's milk protein and all sorts of other artificial synthetic vitamins and minerals, gets into the baby's blood, into the baby's intestinal tract, and because of the hyperpermeability, what we might call today leaky gut, all of those big proteins in there that the baby is having a hard time breaking down because it's not ready to be breaking down those things, get into the bloodstream, and they create allergies. And later on, you know, maybe a short while later, maybe, you know, in teenage years, the child develops an allergic reaction and maybe even an autoimmune reaction. So it started when we were real young, and I don't want to paint a gloom and doom because I only talk about things that can be reversed, that we can actually fix. And I was having, it was an interesting discussion on a Facebook group that I was on, and it was about someone who wrote an article saying, you know, all this hullabaloo and nonsense about diabetes being able to be reversed is nonsense, that diabetes can't be reversed. Diabetes is a disease, and it comes and it stays, and maybe you can manage some of the symptoms, but you can't reverse it. And others were arguing that that's not true, and I was one of them, and the thing that the guy said, and this I want you to just hear because this is true and it carries across not just diabetes but other things. He said something along the lines of, this disease can't be cured because if you go back to the diet and lifestyle habits, the old diet and lifestyle habits, it will come back. Interesting. So I started to think of all kinds of analogies for that. One of them I thought of was, oh, broken bone can't be reversed either, then, if that's the case. Because if you go back and do the same thing that caused the bone to break, it's going to break again. Oh, and a headache that's caused by being hit in the head with a hammer can't be reversed, right? If you stop hitting your head with a hammer or hitting against a wall and you get the inflammation down and you do things and the headache goes away, by his logic, if you just go back and that headache hasn't been reversed because if you go back and hit the person over the head again, they're going to get the headache again. So it defies logic. And the reason I bring this up at this point is that the stuff that happened as a child, as a baby, a lot of the things that we think are irreversible diseases, like asthma, for example, like various autoimmune diseases like eczema, lupus, people think they're not reversible. Hashimoto's, diabetes. But when you reverse the habits, when you take away the habits that contributed to it and you fill in the gaps with wonderful nutrition, things can be reversed. So let's go back to the gut flora. Maybe you have a messed up gut flora because you were not breastfed, you were given antibiotics in the early years. I know I certainly was because by the time I was 5, I had my tonsils out because I had chronic. So I was on many courses of antibiotics before that. So no breastfeeding, antibiotics, lots of courses of it throughout your childhood. Maybe you were a girl who had trouble getting her periods regulated and the doctor put you on birth control pills. Hello, me again, right? So I had no breastfeeding. I had had the antibiotics. I had the birth control pills. All of these things disrupt the good bacteria, the microbiome, and lead to some of the diseases that we're seeing, and lead to some of the diseases not just of the digestive tract, you know, like constipation, diarrhea, Crohn's disease, et cetera, but that can lead to diseases of the brain and things that have been linked to problems in the gut very strongly in multiple studies are things like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, attention deficit, even in some cases autism. Certainly brain fog, memory problems, need I go on. So we need to be able to look at how we can reverse this, right? Because it's not that it can't be reversed. It's not necessarily easy to be reversed, because easy, by easy, it means people want to just take a pill. You have heartburn, you take the little purple pill and expect that your heartburn's going to go away. And it does suppress the symptoms. Kind of like if you had a smoke detector going off in your house in the middle of the night and you pulled out the battery and it stopped telling you, that's similar to what happens with when you take the purple pill and other kinds of pills for various ailments. The symptoms go away, right? The fire detector stops firing. It doesn't mean the house isn't going to burn down. So we need to be able to look at how can we pull together, how can we clean up our gut so that it has an influence positively on our brains and also the rest of it. So we talked briefly about the bacteria. So there have been studies that show there are certain bacterial colonies that will lead to obesity because it makes it such that you're very efficient at utilizing your food. There's others that lead to lack of obesity or you know, ability to stay lean. And when they've done studies and they've transported bacteria from an animal that had a certain colony into an animal that had the other, those colonies that had the lean bacteria became obese. Okay, so that happens. We have other ways that the digestive bacteria, the microbiome, disruptions in the microbiome, disruptions in those organisms can attributed and have been attributed to the onset of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So it's really important to get the bacteria colonies worked out, to get rid of the overgrowth of bad bacteria that are harming the system, to get rid of parasites and funguses, candidiasis, things like that. And because these bacteria that are not supposed to be in your gut, or the ones that are supposed to be there but they're overgrown, they will produce endotoxins. They will produce chemicals called lipopolysaccharides. And these can seep into the bloodstream and do havoc and wreak havoc. Can affect your moods, your behavior, your feelings, as well as your skin, your joints, your liver. So bacteria. So how do you take charge of that? How do you take charge of the bacteria in your gut? Well, in any case, you've got to stop the habits that are contributing. We have a webinar happening in just about an hour and a half tonight, and I would highly encourage you to come because I'll be showing a slide presentation and talking about this in more depth, and I'll be talking about a way that you can reverse some of the issues with the bad bacteria and restore your microbiome. And we're going to give you some insights into how you can do that on the short term and the long term. Other thing, and the other way that the brain is affected, not just by the microbiome, it's affected by the permeability of the gut. What I talked about earlier, that babies are naturally born with leaky gut. Leaky gut is considered a pathology. Leaky gut is now, as an adult, if those membranes, those holes between the cells are too large, they're going to let toxins get in. And also because there's inflammation, and the inflammation interferes with the active transport of nutrients, it's going to prevent a lot of the nutrients from getting in. So no matter how good your diet might be, the truth of the matter is, if your gut isn't working properly, you're not going to be able to nourish the rest of your body. So you could be eating really great food, but if you don't heal the damage and you don't eat the proper food for you, you're going to have a problem. And the influences on that, on your brain, are widespread. There are certain vitamins, minerals, amino acids that your brain needs to make neurotransmitters to keep inflammation under control. And when you don't digest properly because you have a leaky gut, that goes away. And you don't have enough nutrition in your brain, and you have inflammation in your brain. So how does your stomach acid affect the chemical communication system in your brain? This is critical because your brain needs proteins, amino acids actually. Your stomach acid helps you to break down those proteins. And if you don't have enough stomach acid, what's going to happen is you're not going to break those proteins down into their amino acids. And if you don't break them down into their amino acids, the brain isn't going to have the raw materials it makes to make the proper amounts of neurotransmitters. And then it just goes away. You just don't get enough in your brain. You become agitated, moody, irritable, depressed, anxious. So it's really important that you take charge of your gut. And I'm going to share with you a couple of ways to do that. But I will invite you to come and learn more in an hour and a half presentation we're doing later. So one, like I said, avoid disrupting your microbiome. How do you do that? Only take antibiotics if it's a life-threatening situation. And really ask your doctor, am I going to die if I don't take this? Is this going to progress? Because a lot of times the doctors are expecting that you're expecting to get an antibiotic when you go in with a sniffle. Second of all, I would say, don't go to the doctor with a sniffle. Look for alternative ways to deal with it. Only go to the doctor if you feel like it's extreme, because that's what they're good at, extreme emergency situations. So the other thing is avoid commercially grown animal products. Don't eat meat or dairy or eggs unless they've been raised organically and ethically and fed on grass, because the factory conditions where they're jammed together in a pen allows the, you know, makes it much, much more likely that they're going to have infections. So to protect from that, those animals are fed tons of antibiotics. They're also fed steroid hormones to make them grow, make, you know, more milk be produced, to make the cow grow bigger. And steroid hormones will also affect the flora in your gut. People will very freely, every time they get a little cut on their hand, oh, put the hydrocortisone on it, make sure it doesn't become an infection. Not a good thing to do, because that stuff will get through into your system. You know, steroids, some people take it for athletic performance. That's a different story, but they're prescribed a lot for autoimmune disease. And autoimmune disease, in spite of the fact that medicine says it's not reversible, in my experience, a lot of people can reverse their autoimmune disease with proper attention to diet and lifestyle, with proper attention to rebuilding their gut, with proper attention to avoiding toxins in the air and the food and the water, and getting rid of the ones that you do, eating organically, eating consciously. So that's one thing. So you're going to avoid antibiotics as much as you can, avoid the steroid hormone drugs as much as you can. You're going to want to make sure that any, if you're eating any animal products, that they are not commercially grown. And the other thing, one last thing, well, there's a whole lot of things we could do. Avoid sugar and refined foods, because that's going to feed the microbiome, the piece, part of it that you don't want. That's going to feed the pathogens. So a lot of people are like, well, it's okay, I don't eat sugar, but I eat honey and maple syrup because those are natural and healthy. No, they still feed those bacteria. So you have to be really careful what you feed yourself. And we just got finished a cleanse. We do a 7-day cleanse, and I always wonder, you know, I'm just marvel at how the kinds of results people get. But they get off of everything, and they just, you know, drink or eat greens for a week. And it's pretty a remarkable, I mean, totally remarkable situation. And they do phenomenally. It turns a lot of things around. And there's all the extra phytochemicals in those foods. There's also the contribution to good bacteria. The fiber, fiber in your food will help to feed the beneficial flora. It will help to create short-chain fatty acids and butyrate and all kinds of wonderful things that protect your gut. So whole foods, off of those. The other things that you can do to start to build this back up is, you know, look at your stomach acid. Stomach acid, a lot of people are taking that little purple pill, Prilosec or any of the other proton pump inhibitors or whatever, because they have what they experience as excess stomach acid because they feel burning. The truth of the matter is a very large percentage of the burning that people feel in their stomach is not related at all to excess stomach acid. It's related to too little stomach acid. So especially if you're over the age of 30, it's unlikely that you have excess stomach acid. There are rare situations when it's true. But when you take those antacids or Tums or any of those things, those are inhibiting your stomach acid, which is inhibiting your protein absorption and your mineral absorption, which is going to affect your brain, right? So taking care of that stomach acid, if you are having burning, it means that there's probably a problem with the valve between the stomach and the esophagus and things are regurgitating up. Your stomach is beautifully designed to handle acid because it operates in a very acid environment. Your esophagus isn't. But that flap is supposed to keep contents from going back up. But there's a lot of things that relax that flap. And a lot of it is just standard habits that most people in the U.S. and the Western world have, which are, you know, drinking coffee, alcohol, smoking, and getting stressed, eating too much, lying down after eating, wearing clothing that's too tight around the waist that puts pressure on the stomach to push it up. So all of those things can be controlled. Now, I've given you a lot of information in our time together here, and there's a lot more that I can give you. And the truth of the matter is it's a step-by-step process to bring this into balance. So I would encourage you to come to our webinar tonight, and the way that you can do that is to go to, and if you're listening to this later, you can come to the link anyway, and we'll let you know how to get access or how to get access to more information. But the thing is, if you go to, let's see what it is, it's called Gut Repair Strategies. Let me just make sure I have the right thing. Gut Healing Program. Let's see. GutHealingStrategies.com. And that'll take you to where you can sign up for that webinar. So your brain and your gut are so important, and your brain affects your gut. So here's the deal. There's two neurotransmitters in your brain that are also in your gut. There's others probably too, but these are the main ones, serotonin and dopamine. And they have an effect on the motility of your gut, how quickly things move through, how well your gut is digesting. So when you feel, say you have a gut feeling, a lot of it has to do with these neurotransmitters in your gut. Okay? You have an amazing capacity for interaction between these places. So what do? You do the things I've just talked to you about, and you adopt a diet that's clean and whole, and you look at getting rid of your bad habits with food. What do you do beyond food? Well, remember I said steroid hormones affect the gut and affect the motility of the gut and affect the critters in the gut? So stress is one of those things that creates excess cortisol. When you're under stress, and cortisol is a steroid hormone, all this cortisol is coursing through the system. So managing your stress. And if you've been on my show before, you've heard us talk about a process from the Institute of Heart Math, and I call it mini vacations. So take a mini vacation several times throughout the day. Tune into your breathing. Go to a place where you enjoy and you feel appreciative. And I'm talking in your mind, go to that place. I go to the beach a lot during the day to keep myself calm and focused. And here's the other way that it all affects. The cortisol affects your brain in that when the cortisol is coming out to protect you, what happens is the front part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex gets inhibited, because not a good time to solve math problems when you're running away from a tiger. And the back part of your brain, I call it the lizard brain, knows how to get out, knows how to move fast. That gets activated. You know, a lot of people get really nervous when they have a big exam coming up or they have to do a performance on stage. And that's the last time in the world you want your brain to go out to lunch. So this is a really good thing, right? So I would love to open it up for questions, and I'm going to see if Lynn has any questions. And because I know that this is a topic that there's just a lot of questions about, so rather than me assuming what you may want to hear, I'm just going to allow you to dictate what we cover. So go ahead and raise your hand by hitting 1 on your keypad. And Lynn, I'm actually going to open you up and you can tell them better than I, because I don't always remember. So Lynn, go ahead.
Okay, so if you're already on the phone, press 1 on your telephone keypad and that will raise your hand and we'll be able to open your line and you can talk live with Dr. Rita Marie. If you're on the web but you would like to call in and talk with us, the number is 424-243-9555. And again, press 1 on your phone keypad. The number again is 424-243-9555. And so as you've been talking, one of the things that occurs to me is that our body is continually replenishing itself. We slough off
right.
old spells and build new ones. And so as you were talking about, you know, things defying logic, that was one of the things that came to the forefront of my brain of what they were saying not making sense. It's because
right.
our body is continually doing that, and so we're not the same. And every time we eat, because food is medicine, we change that replenishing. So if we're continually eating really good food, the cells that we're replenishing our body with are these really good, healthy cells.
And they get better and better the longer you're doing it.
Exactly. You know, I was always sick as a child. I had my tonsils out when I was about 5, all the antibiotics. While I didn't have a cycle problem, I had acne, and so I was given tetracycline, you know. And so that was my form of poison. And and so like you and other people, I've had to teach myself these things. And that's why I'm just really grateful that I found the words of wisdom that you've been teaching us about these things, about the importance of good food. And food can be tasty, certainly a whole lot better than a purple pill.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I think those are good points because so many times we haven't been taught from the time we were born and the time we were growing up that food is medicine and that food's important and it's information that we're giving our body. And we've overlooked the fact that, yeah, it's just food. Well, most of the stuff that people eat is not even food, quite frankly. It's just food lookalikes that have been processed
right.
in a lab. And maybe there's little bits of food in there, but they're not. They're artificially created. And our bodies need the signals. So, of course, if you go back to doing the things that caused the problem's going to come back. That doesn't mean that the problem is not reversible. It is. It is. And we're empowered to know that the situations, the choices we make a difference in the health. And I think that it's hard for people. I mean, I was very fortunate that my health fell apart in my 20s, and it didn't make sense what they wanted me to do. They didn't really have answers for me, and I found answers on my own. And this was back in the 80s, so we didn't have the internet back in the 80s. We didn't have
yeah.
shows like this where you could learn, and I had to learn on my own, but it made sense to me. And I just didn't want to keep destroying my body, and I made a decision to switch it. And if you know certain things and you're not making choices, sometimes there's a little emotional component that you might have to work on. That feeling of deprivation is one that a lot of people feel. Like, I just need to have more variety. Like, there's a gazillion number of foods that you can eat that are healthy for you. There's no lack of variety and diversity in the healthy food kingdom. It's not what you're used to, and you need to learn some new habits. And that's why we've created the community we have. That's why we do these radio shows, and that's why we have our Vital Health community where people come together and we teach you how to make these foods and make them delicious. So,
right.
It's a matter of retraining.
Because otherwise you feel really alone. I know. That's why I really enjoy this, because I'm the only one in my community, and so that's why I appreciate everybody who comes and listens and asks questions. Because that community is so important. And even though when you're making your dishes in Austin, Texas, and I'm up here in the Northern Plains, I still feel connected to people, and that helps heal my body too.
Absolutely,
you know,
that's a huge piece of it. Connection is a huge part of your healing. Right. I would just say that I love sharing this, and when you're what I'd like to do is give you some little tricks and tips to help you to just stop doing the things that might be causing it. But I'm addicted to sugar is what I hear a lot. I can't help it. And there is a physiologic addiction. There absolutely is. And sometimes you have to just white knuckle through the beginning part to let go of it. It was hard for me. I was very addicted to sugar. I couldn't eat just one candy bar. I had to eat the whole bag. I couldn't just eat a little scoop of ice cream. I had to eat the whole thing because it set up this addictive nature. And I struggled with, you know, keeping my weight from getting too high and being too vain to get overweight and then, you know, doing crazy stuff to prevent that. And I struggled with eating, with food, with my relationship with food. Because we kind of pick up this disordered relationship with food starting when we're little. But when you start to think about it, like every time you think about putting that candy bar into your body or you know, whatever it is, maybe it's a specific soft drink or juice or something that you're looking at putting into your body, when you think about what that can do to your gut flora and how that can affect your mood, how that affects your ability to focus, I mean, what's it costing you to have these issues in your gut? What is it costing you to be brain fogged? You could be missing out on promotions at work, and it's costing you a lot of money. But on the other side, it costs you in your relationships with other people because you could be moody and grouchy or complaining, or it costs you in your fun, your experience of fun, because you're too bloated and gassy or you're too headachy and irritable to go out and have fun with your friends. So I would really, as you sit and think about this particular, like, foods that you put in your mouth, it's really a 30-second experience on your tongue. And maybe, you know, if you eat a large portion, maybe it's a 30-minute experience on your tongue. But that pleasure of that 30 minutes, or that 30 seconds usually, is then thwarted by the feeling in your body as your body starts to misfunction. And it's like really sitting with food and consciously saying, is this serving my body? What am I going to get out of this? What downside is this going to have to eat it? What is it going to serve me? How is it going to serve me in the next 2 minutes, the next 2 hours, the next 2 days, and the next 2 years? Because people say, oh, I'm just going to have a little bit because a little bit doesn't matter. The truth is, or it's because my birthday or whatever. The truth of the matter is there will be an excuse for you every single day of the year. I guarantee you. And just get started. Just decide you're going to make friends with your microbiome, like as a good starting point. What can you do? Right? And there's delicious probiotic-rich foods on the market these days. There's kefirs and sauerkrauts and coconut yogurt and things like that that you can replenish your good bacteria. It's the trade-off. It's what do you give up, what do you take in? Balance that for a while and then go on to the next. Your gut and your brain will be very happy that you did.
I agree.
Yeah. So if we don't have any other questions typed in or people on the web, then we will just close our show for today. And again, I invite you to join me later today and do our quizzes. We do have a quiz that you can do at Gut Health Quiz. Is it? Let me look it up.
Yep, and
Gut Health Quiz.
It's in the radio show description.
Yeah, guthealthquiz.com. And we're also starting up a program, which we announced the other day, last week, that is a 7-week gut healing program. And we've set it up so that it's packed with all the resources you need. And it's very affordable. And it's at happybellysystem.com. Happybellysystem.com.
We do have a question.
Sure.
I'll open this up real quick.
Yeah.
If you have a feeling it's Sarah Grace.
Well, you know, I didn't raise my hand until you said nobody was there because I like to, you know, you always are so generous with answering my questions, but I did raise my hand when I heard nobody else because I wanted to give other people a chance.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
Well, you know, I get a lot out of other people's questions too, and again, you've been most generous with me, and I just wish there was more I could do. One of these days, I will get a computer and be able to join you all for more things. But what I want to say is that you know, I was doing the 7-day cleanse, and I'm still doing it. I have no desire to eat and to chew. And this is so new for me because I'm telling
Great.
You the hardest thing about going into that cleanse was the idea of not chewing. So I am continuing to do, you know, to blend my food. And it feels right. We talked the other night about, you know, going on the FODMAPs, and I am going to do that. I am finishing up some of the things that I have that are not on that, but I am going to do that. And I'm sure I have SIBO as well. But my question is that you know, you get so much information from so many people, and I'm a research addict. And, you know, one of the things that I read on one of those sites, it might have been a FODMAPs, I think it was. Oh, yeah, it was. And what they say is, you know, have smaller meals. Never have a full stomach because apparently that causes more problems. So I was wondering, so I split up my, you know, I split up to, you know, smaller meals 4 times a day. And so, you know, that seems to be working for me. Also, I just want to quickly say before you answer that question, is that, you know, I was ill starting at a very early age and on antibiotics, so on, you know, similar to your story, and then found out as an adult that I was highly allergic to dairy and gluten. And I do eat whole food, so, you know, I don't eat anything that isn't a whole food. But I just want to say, oh, my goodness, what good news. What good news to hear how many health issues you had and how you recovered from them. So this is very good news. The other thing is I'm going to admit that I nursed my son until a month before his 4th birthday. So,
oh, you wonderful. That's so good. Lucky him.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And he was born in Austin, Texas, and I had a midwife and had a home birth and all that good stuff. Anyway, awesome. I'll be quiet now.
Thank you for sharing that, Sarah Grace. And, you know, the thing, what you pointed out is the question that you asked was about the full. And I like to use the 80% rule because we tend to not get the signal that we're full because we're eating so fast until 10 minutes after we've overeaten. So just keep eating until you feel like, you know, there's still a little room there, but I'm not going to eat anymore. And it's hard the first few times because it takes some self-control and discipline. But you'll notice that the more you do that, and about 10 minutes later you go, yep, that was good. Yep, that was good. So we all have to find our ways. I tend to like 2 meals a day better than 4 meals a day. And I don't overeat. I just, you know, when you're liquefying your foods a lot, you just get to have more of the goodness and the nutrition in a smaller volume. So I think you just have to find your way. And if the 4 hours works and not eating as much, but just keep in mind the 80-20 rule, 80%, like leave 20% buffer there for your stomach to churn and do its thing. Because if it's over full, if you eat too much, your stomach starts to get too big and past its capacity. That's when the reflux starts to happen when you overeat because your stomach just can't hold it all. And sometimes you'll have seepage down in the other way through the pyloric sphincter, and then you get food that's not fully churned and digested coming out of the stomach. So it's much better for you to just go to the 80% full feeling.
I think that's what I do. I think that is really what I do. And, you know, I have to say, I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I really had to go to 12-step programs in order to, you know, arrest my compulsive overeating because I used to eat all day long, literally graze all day long, and ate more than anybody at a meal, too. So I'm in that recovery. I mean, I'm still in recovery. Well, I'm not compulsively overeating. I guess what I want to say is that I keep up with my 12-step program And now it's like I have no desire to overeat, which is a good thing.
Great. That's a good thing. And you just have to keep on top of it because it, you know, could easily start to come back if you eat the wrong kinds of foods and you start to eat those addictive types of foods. And that's part of the overeating thing, too, that a lot of the 12-step programs don't address is the physiologic addiction, like gluten having gluteomorphines and dairy having caseomorphines and sugar just creating this specific insulin resistance pattern that causes you to want more and more and more. So they are addictive foods, and the way they work in the
right.
brain. And, you know, so it's really important that not just the quantity of what you eat, but the quality and what you stay away from. And that's where some of the 12-step programs don't address the what you're eating. They address the manner, the emotional around it and the addiction part. And it's good to have the nutrition piece in there as well.
Well, I've been very lucky because I've had both.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
And for all the information, you're my food diet guru and healing guru. You know, you really are a healing guru. You're such a gift. And so are you, Lynn.
Thank you. I think I don't see any other questions. Lynn, do you see any other questions? Do you have any other questions? Otherwise, we'll just get going and I'll get ready for my next gig.
I don't, but I'm thankful for Sarah Grace too and her willingness to share her experiences, because in the end that's what it all comes down to, is how it affects each and every one of us. You know, like you were saying earlier, that intimate relationship that we have with our food that feeds us on a physical level that also feeds us on an emotional level. And gets us from our microbiome all the way up to our brain. And actually,
right, and down to our toes,
beyond,
too, because toenail
right.
fungus comes from your gut, too.
Exactly. But then if you think about it, it also affects our lineage, because we have the epigenetics that
yes.
we carry down with our experiences. And
absolutely.
And so that's, all of this is why it's so important, like you keep telling us, to be
yep.
mindful, breathe before you eat, know what you're
yep.
putting in. It's real, you know, going back to those basics.
Yep.
And we have one more question. Sorry.
Oh, sure.
Here we go.
Yeah.
516.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Who's there?
Yes, hi. I'm enjoying your program very much. And I have a situation that drives me nuts. I'm vegan. I'm gluten-free. I eat organic. I'm very thin. I can't gain weight. And I have a lung condition, which is called bronchiectasis.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a whole combination. And it seems that because of the bronchiectasis, I lost weight. And I also have Sputumonas in my lungs.
Wow, so you got a lot of stuff going on there. And the lungs seem to be your weak link, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any way that I could possibly gain weight?
Well, you know, there are. You know, and without, this isn't the forum where I could go in and, you know, I'd want to do a detailed diet history for you and exactly what you're eating and what the calories are. And there are ways that you can do it. There may be nutrients that you're missing. And there, I would say one thing off the top of my head would be to try, say, making sure you're eating something, some of the fattier foods every day, like an avocado. I don't know if you eat avocados,
but I do. I eat avocado every day.
You do, okay.
And
then you can, the way to get extra calories in, I mean, it depends on what the cause is. Again, I can't really say because I don't have a full history on you, but if the cause is under calorie, like you're not getting enough calories in, then adding more calories is going to be helpful, but you want them to be healthy calories. So you can make like a coconut milk or a nut milk. because it's easy to get in without all the fiber, and you can get a lot of calories in that way. You can add a little extra olive oil or coconut oil to your food. I don't recommend this to people who are overweight because it's, you know, it's empty, not, so to speak. It's not really empty calories, but it's going to give too much, but you can do that just because you can sneak it in without feeling overly full. But if the problem is your metabolism is just so fast that you're burning this stuff up, then it would be a different situation. If you have the strength to do it, just get a little set of weights, just a little, you know, 1 to 3 pound weights, and start to do some weightlifting. Not so that you don't have to become a muscle person, but you just, that's going to help you to put on muscle weight. Okay, and the other question is are you at an uncomfortably or an unhealthy weight? Because the truth of the matter is that the studies show that undereating creates longevity and better health than overeating.
Well,
so,
doctor, I'll tell you, I'm just embarrassed how I look. I'm 5'4", and I weigh 90 pounds.
You are way underweight, yes. That's very thin.
Very.
That's what I weighed at the end of a 28-day water fast. I'm the same height, and I feel good at about 20 pounds or more better, more than that. So, yes, you are underweight.
Oh, I wish.
I mean, one of the things I could suggest is that set up a consultation. Lynn does consultations for me, and she can just kind of get your history and see if there's a way, you know, what we can do to suggest some stuff to help you with that. So then she can go into more details about your diet and your habits and your different conditions. So that's what I would suggest.
Right.
Okay? And the way that you can
access
that is if you go to the website, drritamarie.com, there should be a tab that says consultations, and just set up a consultation. That would be the best way. Okay?
Thank you, my dear. I appreciate your help.
You are so welcome. You are so welcome.
And keep doing the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you. I intend to. It's my life calling.
Wonderful.
Thanks. Okay, everybody. Thank you. Say that again, Lynn.
I said I'm going to make sure you keep doing it.
Okay.
I do have a question that was typed in on the chat. It says, what is causing the same food to taste different? For instance, something that I liked before, I find it not so good if I eat it too often.
That's a question I'm not sure how to answer. I think, you know, we've grown up with overstimulated taste buds, and we expect things to taste like this, you know, just artificially good, so to speak. And it could be that. It could be that you just get bored with it. I don't, you know, if you eat the same thing over and over, you are going to get tired of it, and that's kind of, that's the way it goes. And variety is really important, and changing things up and adding spices to it and, you know, putting some lemon in it and sometimes not. I would say if that's what's happening to you, you need more variety.
Well, and like you said, sometimes there's that excitotoxin that gets added to our foods, and so we need to always be upping the flavor or the taste level. And,
right.
The other thing, too, is there are certain things that happen to some people as they age where they lose some of their taste.
Right. Absolutely.
So, but there's,
And we get rid of zinc. That zinc is another thing, low zinc, which is a very common mineral to be low in. Zinc is really important for having good taste buds. So a lot of that thing. Thank you for adding that, Lynn.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you guys so very much for being here. This has been the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Lascalvo. If you like this show, go ahead and like us on the Blog Talk. And also add us to iTunes. Go to iTunes and just what do you call it, Lynn, when you do that? Do you like us or subscribe to us? Or there's a way that you can do it. Just go to iTunes.
Yep, when you go to iTunes, you'll subscribe to it, to our podcast. I did want to add that next week we have Dr. Tom O'Brien on.
Oh, yippee. Oh, that's a treat, guys. So Dr. O'Brien is the gluten king. He has led the Gluten-Free Summit, and he'll tell us a lot of the reasons why we should be avoiding gluten and some of the connections between gluten and your brain. So stand by. Next week, same time, same station, and I look forward to seeing you then. Bye now.
Bye.